You're listening
to Welcome to Comics, episode number 311. This week, we talk about Shade, the Changing Girl, Earth Girl Made Easy. Visit welcometocomics.com, hear past episodes, see what we're reading next, or send us feedback. This show is supported by listeners like you. Access bonus episodes by becoming a patron today at patreon.com/welcometocomics. And now, the cast begins.
I haven't really been doing much interesting stuff since we spoke last.
Yeah, it's been a pretty straightforward week.
I guess that's the word I'll use.
I think maybe because like the holidays are over, people are kind of recovering. I went to Grand Prix Santa Clara, which is a big match. And I didn't play in the main event. I just kind of hung out with some people and we went and met some artists and got some cards signed. And then we played in a commander event. So it was like $10 and you just played one multiplayer game and then reported the results and everybody got some prize.
That's cool.
Yeah. So, like first place got like 60. I think second place got 40 and then third and fourth got 20 tickets each. And then you just go to their prize thing and, you know, you can turn your tickets in for singles or like booster packs or whatever.
Well, that's cool. Then you can go and just play commander with your buds all day. And like
that's what we did.
Some new people.
It was just like me, Brandon, my cousin Brandon, our friend Alex, and another friend named Eric, and we just played one game, and then we went and ate. It was pretty cool. I mean, it was fun. We got to, you know, and the cool thing about like GPs is there's a lot of vendors that are usually selling singles for a bit cheaper than you can get them online usually. So yeah. It's pretty cool. I didn't really buy anything, which is good. I at first, like I thought, oh, I didn't come prepared with a list of things I wanted to buy. But then that turned out to be a positive because I barely spent any money. So
no, I remember I went to my first GP last year and it was really fun. I got like autographed art and stuff, but like, I don't have a list of cards I'm like looking for. Cause I don't really, if a card's over $5, I really have a hard time buying it. Mm-hmm. Like, unless it's, like, a really, really good card, in which case I'll spring for it. But usually I'm like, you know, I play this casually a handful of times a year. I don't want to buy, like, a $300 deck.
Yeah, I hear you.
Then I say that, but then I've been looking up, like, how to play Star Wars Destiny. Because it looks really fun.
Yeah, it's really popular. I'm actively trying not to pick up new, like, board games and stuff.
Yeah, it's tough because there's new fun stuff that comes out all the time. And I remember when we were doing Game Night Bot, we'd be like, if it's a $20 or $30 investment for everybody, that's not too bad. And you can just go and try a new game and have a good time. But now it's like, I've got so many games that I just have like a couple decks of that I'm never going to play again. Like Versus System and the WoW CCG. And it's got like tons of this stuff.
Yeah.
I got Star Trek HeroClix. Like that was really fun at the time. But what the fuck am I going to do with all these Klingon ships now?
Yeah, we haven't even like looked at those for like more than a year.
When's the last time I even played X-Wing?
X-Wing, I still want to play, but I haven't bought any in a long time. There's a lot of like community supported or community created alternate versions of X-Wing that are not just like one-on-one dogfighting.
Hmm.
There's like a kind of like RPG-ish version of it.
That's
start
cool.
With the basic, you start with a basic ship and you have like a game master and so everybody is played by all the players are rebel ships and the Empire is like the game play is, you know, it's like you're playing against a board game kind of thing.
Mm.
And then as you go along, you level up and you could eventually get a named pilot and stuff. It's pretty cool.
That's neat.
And then there's another one that came out recently that's like objective based gaming with X-Wing. So there's some cool things out there.
I think the best game night we had with X-Wing was when we did the trench run.
Yeah. That and now awesome. That I have my 3D printer, I'm going to print some of those little turrets.
Yeah.
Like the Death Star turrets.
I'm so happy you have
I think
that.
It'll be fun to give it another try, I think.
Yeah. And then Armada, we never played Armada.
So right before Christmas, Barnes & Noble had Armada for 50% off. Like everything, ooh, every package was 50% off. And I was very close to just dropping like $100 and buying a bunch of it. And I talked myself out of it, which I think was a good thing.
When's the last time we played Armada?
You never played Armada. You mean X-Wing?
Yeah, no, Armada. That's what I'm saying. Like, I look at those ships, too.
I've never played Armada.
Yeah, I look at the ships, too. I'm like, oh, that looks really cool. I'd like to try that. That looks fun. And I remember we were in the celebration before they announced it, and we were like, that looks really awesome. We should play that. Yeah, totally. And here we are years later.
But it's okay. I mean, sometimes I back, like, board games on Kickstarter. So I have actually a couple board games coming in the mail in the next year. Both of them are giant robot fighting board games.
I think you might have a type.
Oh yeah, I have. Yeah, giant robots, giant monsters, and Star Wars, those are all my type. I'm pretty excited for Pacific Rim.
Yes,
I am so hyped for that.
I just want John Boyega to be in more things, but we should probably talk about this comic.
Yeah, you guys ready?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
This week's comic.
This week we read Shade, the Changing Girl, Earth Girl Made Easy by Cecil Castellucci. And this is a very, very big tonal shift from last week's episode.
Yeah.
This is part of DC's Young Animal, which is, as I understand it, is like kind of one of their rebirth side efforts where they're like, we're going to print weird stuff again. Because every once in a while, something really weird turns out really awesome. So we're just going to do weird stuff sometimes. And we actually have two Young Animal titles on our best of 2017's list, and this is the first of the two, the other one being Doom Patrol, which has a history of being really fucking weird. So when they bring it back, let's keep it really fucking weird. But this Shade the Changing Girl is way out there.
Mm-hmm. So have you guys ever read, like, I know there was a Shade the Changing Man.
Nope, never looked at it.
So I never read it either, but I remember there being a New 52 Shade the Changing Man, and he was like a mystical character. I think he was in Justice League Dark, maybe I'm making that up.
Could be. I mean, I know Shade as like the villain with the top hat who makes shadows and stuff. That's my idea of Shade in the DC universe. Is that who?
Yeah,
this
is? No. This Shade the Changing Man is a hero.
Okay.
Hmm.
And he is called Rack Shade. So I think he is the original one. So I looked it up on Wikipedia. Yeah. There was actually a Shade the Changing Man from the 70s who was called Rack Shade, which is not the same one as... I don't think it's the same one as from the New 52. It looks like there was one in the 90s. Yeah, there's a New 52 one. There's a bunch of different ones.
Huh.
And this version, Shade the Changing Girl, is the most recent one.
So, I mean, talking about...
So it looks like this one is... kind of picks up from the original one, because he's like, he's got the madness cloak, and the original guy is from Meta. So
we're talking about like Shade the villain with the top hat in the shadows, and Shade the Changing Man hero. Mm-hmm. But I want to talk about like the concept of protagonist in the story. Like, we follow Loma Shade, but that's like, do we want to think of Loma Shade as protagonist? Like, sure, Loma Shade finds out that the body she's inhabiting used to be inhabited by a really evil person, or just a mean person. I'm not going to say evil per se, but a really mad, like, angry, bad person. And she drives that spirit away. And, like, I think we're supposed to see that as some big victory. But part of me, like, from the very beginning was like, this whole thing feels like a kind of violation. And so this comic, like, really teeters on not even good and bad, just teeters on the like away from the concept of protagonist. And it actually reminds me a lot of, and I think it's the last issue or second last issue where they go to the zoo, and I'm like, you're in the zoo, Loma Shade. You put on the maniscope to come to Earth and see the Earth animals and come to the Earth zoo and look at all of us do weird things. I don't like the whole concept of her as a character. And like, I just remember like issue two, I was like, is this person a hero? Am I rooted for something here? Like, where is this even going? What am I doing? Like, as a storytelling, like, what is, where am I driving towards? So like it took me a while to just be confused, and then finally we got to the whole hook of, oh, I'm gonna drive the Megan spirit away because she was a total bitch. But like it's kind of her body and her life.
Well, I mean, the thing is I'm just gonna play devil's advocate here because I don't know what the right answer to this is, but you know, Loma says, you know, if you come back in your body, you're just gonna be in a coma again. So I mean, I guess it's not necessarily a good thing because Loma basically is deciding that Megan's potential quality of life is not worth living, and so she should just disappear into the ether or whatever. And that's, you know, like you said, Andy, I think we're supposed to see that as a positive, but at least at this point in the story, maybe later it comes up and that's not the case, but you're right. At this point, it's kind of questionable.
Yeah. It just,
I'm supposed to see Loma as flawed, right?
Yeah.
Because,
oh yeah,
if you look at her, she's supposed to be a fuck up on meta. She can't get her life together. She drops out of school, dumps her boyfriend. She uses him to get the coat, and I think she views it more as like a second chance for herself, and she doesn't realize how much like Megan she actually is in some ways. She does. She has like a lot more introspection than that. But she's like, okay, I'm going to be better. But she doesn't realize that she's doing something terrible in this new life she started for herself too.
Yeah, and I mean, like, I guess you could say it's a utilitarian thing too. I mean, that would be my devil's advocate. Like, yes, what you're doing to Megan is probably terrible, because what is that essence that you drove away? Was that like her soul? Did you just send her soul to the afterlife? Like, was that really your job to do, Loma? But on the other hand, all of the people who are still alive, their quality of life is much improved. I mean, the parents are a little confused, but most of the people, like, who hate her have that baggage from before, but, like, they don't actively have new reasons to hate her, and she's not actively terrifying them. And, like, Teacup is having a great life. River would have had a terrible life with her living next door. The only really question mark is the parents, because who the fuck is their daughter now? Like, what the fuck is their daughter? What is their relationship to this person in that daughter's body? What does this even do? Who the fuck knows? But I guess I would, you know, from a utilitarian point of view, it was a good move-ish.
It's better. I mean, Loma still is kind of an asshole. She's like, I think at some point the mom's like, I pressed your uniform. And she's like, school, I'm done with that now. Right. So she doesn't realize like that it's her, or maybe that she has some sort of like obligation to the people who knew Megan. And it takes her a while. And yeah. I mean, throughout this trade, she develops that. But then also she gets into, like, a fist fight with the girl who's the new captain of the swim team.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked Loma. I feel like she was more complex. I think it's really easy to write a hero, right? Like, you can give any number of situations and you just have them pick, like, the best moral outcome that they can. And sometimes things don't work out. But this is someone who, going in, like, I think, just as a means of escape from what was boring in her old life. She wasn't trying to seek like any kind of redemption. She was just like drawn to the poet Rackshade and, you know, went for it. And then she realized that she had to, you know, kind of atone for someone else's poorly lived life. And then she decides to do it. And she's like, well, I'm stuck here. I might as well. So it's not even like she's necessarily making the choice to be a good person. She's just stuck there and deciding that she wants to be less shitty than Megan. But I think that made her more relatable, I guess. Because it's kind of like when you're in such a bad situation, what are you supposed to do?
Yeah, no, I mean, I want to be clear. My confusion is mostly just like in terms of like this being a comic book and being a DC comic book, too. And not like this is probably brand identity too. But if I read Image, I'm much more willing to go with weird stuff or even Dark Horse, there's some weird stuff. Like, but with DC, you kind of come to it expecting superheroism, or, you know, not necessarily like tights and capes, but, you know, generally that construct still exists in a certain way that's identifiable, and it's just kind of not here. So it took me a long time to get past that. But I do appreciate that Loma Shade is like a complex person, and I think it works on multiple levels because I think the more complex, more realistic, more human relationships are on Meta, and the more fucked up two-dimensional relationships are on Earth. And it's I like that little flip. What is the guy's name? The boyfriend that had sex with Loma Shade in the museum, the security guard. What the hell's his name?
Lepuk.
Yeah, Lepuk. Like, that's a shit position for him to be in, too. Like, and I like when he's drinking with his friends, and they're like, she just, like, left this to you. That ain't right, bro. You need to turn her in. And, like, he's in a shit spot, and it's a complex situation. And then Melu's kind of going after him, and Melu has her own motives because she was in love with Rackshade. Apparently they had a relationship. I think that's what we're supposed to garner. And so, like, there's a lot of, like, complex moving parts in Meta. But Earth is just like, yeah, Megan was a bitch and everybody hates her. Like, it's very two-dimensional.
Yeah, and her cruelty isn't born of anything until Loma gives it voice, right? Like, it seems like Megan is just mean to be mean. And then Loma's in there digging in her head, and she's like, oh, this is the kind of rage that comes from, like, sadness and insecurity and jealousy. And she's like, I'm familiar with this. But we don't ever see Megan as, like, a fully fleshed out person. She's just mean. And it takes Loma coming in to, you know, make her a person, which is kind of sad, too.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, for me, too, coming from as a father from the last couple of years, like, the sad thing, too, is the parents were like, maybe she's better now. Maybe she's, like, the parents knew that their daughter was a horrible person. And they're confused about where they are. But, like, they kind of didn't want their daughter back, I think, at a certain point. Like, they had come to terms with the fact that they had lost their daughter. And I think they had come to terms with the fact with realizing that their daughter was not a good person. That's super fucking depressing. So maybe there's somewhere else for them to go, but, like, I'm super conflicted about the parents, because, like, your peers and your high school friends is one thing, but those parents are like, what the fuck is my daughter now? Like, no, your daughter's dead. I'm just inhabiting her body. Like, what?
That was actually super sad when the mom was like, I think I like her now. Or at the beginning, she was like,
oh, yeah,
really upset that Megan woke up. And you're like, what?
Yeah.
You know, why would you be upset that your kid in a coma woke up? But then, and the weird part, too, is like, we never actually see what Megan did to her parents. We only can assume that it was really shitty.
Yeah, and I don't know that I want to see. I think that's a too big of a tonal shift for this comic. I don't want to go down that road.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's more about Loma patching things up anyway, and it seems like Loma, she likes these parents too. I love the scene where she sits on the couch and she's like, you know, my parents failed the test, but you guys are great parents.
Yes.
And they're like, what?
Yeah, everything's like totally out of context.
Yeah, but it's so sincere too. And kind of the best part, like, Loma barely tries to hide the fact that she's a crazy alien. She just goes around, like, referencing herself as Loma Shade. She's like, yeah, people are just gonna be cool with this. They're not gonna wonder what the hell I'm doing.
Well, and that's where like, again, I question the moral, because she's, I think from the beginning, she's coming in and this is like a tour. Like, I'm gonna have this body and I'm gonna fuck around and there's not gonna be any consequences because I can always just go home. And so I think you're right, Jen. You know, like, she only gets really serious when she realizes she kind of can't go home. And she starts trying to figure, can I trust this person? Can I not trust this person? Like, who do I really want to tell more of the truth to, and who do I not? Like, that kind of thought process doesn't start until she, like, tries to go back when River finds the star. And she's just like, oh, fuck. Why the hell can I really not go back now? Like, the third time trying when she couldn't do it, then she's just like, yeah, okay, I give up.
And it sounds like she can't really control the madness either. And I assume that's what's getting her stuck on Earth more than, like, her wanting to stay. Because, I mean, she tries to go home, and at first I was like, oh, in her subconscious, she just wants to make friends on Earth and not go back. But she seems, like, really prideful.
Mm.
Everyone is like, oh, the madness is so dangerous, it will kill you. it will hollow you out and leave you as a shell, that kind of thing. And she's like, no, I got this.
Yeah, but isn't it because wasn't the coat was Rackshade's and she's a big Rackshade fan? Like, it is prideful, but I mean, if she's like, I think it doesn't say somewhere in here, maybe it was in one of the bios at one of the end of the comics, because I read the singles, that like she was like a scholar of Rackshade way after it was fashionable to be into Earth.
She was a poetry major.
Yeah. So she's got some bona fides.
Yeah.
She's done the literary criticism of the Rackshade poetry.
And I, side note, I love the incorporation of that poetry.
Yeah, it works really well.
It's a nice narrative touch.
And it works because the I think by necessity, Loma Shade's internal, like the monologue, the text boxes for her have to be kind of disjointed at times, because she's not supposed to be perceived as being all there. And the Rackshade poetry kind of fills in those blanks and gives you the bigger context for what the story's trying to tell without having to mess up Loma Shade's narrative. It works out really, really well that way.
Yeah, and it also works narratively because, well, for every situation, she kind of has like this poetic mantra that she tells herself. She's like, what is a poem I can use in this situation? And she goes and recites one, and usually it does parallel it, but things often don't turn out the way she expects or wants them to. So it's kind of like she's using it as her guiding principle, but at the same time, it's not poetry, and she has to learn that.
And I like at the end when she's fighting the spirit of Megan, and she's like, oh, what do I know that will help me here? Poetry, that's fucking useless.
Yeah. Turns out, friendship. I like that scene, too, because it's the scene where, teacup solidifies as, like, her friend. And she's like, oh, you're actually not Megan. You're a cool alien person who's not going to beat me up.
Yeah, she finally buys in with River.
Yeah.
No, that scene though also reminds me of there's a philosopher named Zizek, and he's like, philosophy, and this is a philosopher saying, he's like, philosophy is dumb and stupid and useless. Like, it's all just a pastime that we get to have as leisure. He's like, you know, if a comet's coming towards Earth and we see it coming, like, philosophy's worthless. We need scientists and astronauts and people of actual value. And it's like, yeah, poetry's great, but kind of a leisure thing. Not really a skill you need right now, is it, Loma? I think we should also really talk about the art in here, and get into a serious discussion, because I appreciate the way from the very first moment in issue one that Loma wakes up in Megan's body, you can't really tell what is real and what is not real.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't really tell what they're interacting with and what they're not. Like, there's an elephant in the room, and there's flowers and the balloons look like they're moving because the elephant's pushing them, but is that just the wind? And then the person's like, I need to get this Megan girl out of here because she's awake and we can't handle this, but, like, you're a hospital, you're meant to handle this. Like, I don't know. And then towards the end, there's, like, little shit floating around that every once in a while somebody would be looking at one of those bubbles that floats around her. And you're like, do you see that? And then in the end, they obviously see Megan. But that's like a strong manifestation or something, I guess. But I appreciate, like, from the very beginning and all the way through, there's this, like, did that character just notice that random thing floating around? That random bubble? Because I've been seeing them this whole time, and I've just been kind of ignoring them. Is that the madness creeping in? Because are you going mad too, near the coat? I don't know.
Yeah, every once in a while, somebody will make a comment about something. River, I think, does it a couple times. Like, once when he first meets her in the library, there's some of the, like, goop from the vest on his book. And then later he asks what this stuff is. And I think Megan is fighting the other girl on the swim team, or the other girls react to Megan's multiple arms.
Mm-hmm.
Or the hand going into her forehead.
Yeah.
So it seems like she can't control... Loma can't control the vest in any, like, meaningful way, but she's kind of scholar person and a bit nuts herself. I don't think she minds. Like, it doesn't seem to be that it occurs to her that all these wacky things are happening.
She just rolls with it, actually.
Yeah.
That's, you know, now that I think about it, that's the weirdest part of this. Like, all this weird stuff is manifesting around her all the time. And the person who cares the least is Loma.
Well, and I think that's what Melu was getting at. Like, if you don't know how to control it, the madness gets to you. And she's just kind of like rolling with it and not controlling it in any certain way. And I don't know what that balancing act is supposed to look like, because my first interaction with this concept is with Loma right here. And Loma's just like not controlling it. She's just like, it's cool. We'll just flow with it. But Melu is very much like, we need to control it or it will kill you. And there definitely is every once in a while with the madness too, a sense of danger. Like there's, she's trying to swim and she can't swim. And as she's getting out of the pool, there's like eyeballs and shit looking in, like Cthulhu level shit in the pool as she's getting out, not drowning. It's like subtle and it matches the color palette, but it's kind of freaky. And you're like, it gives a sense of danger to the madness that you don't get in most of the narrative from Loma's perspective. Most of Loma's narrative perspective is just like, this is fun. Yeah, I'm going to put on these cool glasses. But every once in a while, like in the sides of a panel or in the background, you can see some real danger happening.
Yeah. Right, but I think it's hard to tell if that, like, there's these dangerous things appearing in the background, but are they really dangerous? I mean, I think they're dangerous in that act badly to them. But they're not, like, physical things, necessarily. But I guess that goes, like, now that starts a discussion about perception versus reality, right?
Yeah.
Because people make themselves sick, right? Like, psychosomatic symptoms and things.
Well, and didn't Melu say, like, half that they had some program before with the men's coats and half of the people died?
Yeah.
And he doesn't say how they, or she doesn't say how they died. I thought it was a dude for like 80% of this comic until at the
so
end they refer to Melu as a she. I'm like, oh.
So a little bit of a side note, when I looked up Shade the Changing Man on Wikipedia, apparently Melu is a character from that comic too. She was like Rackshade's girlfriend. Or fiance. She was Rackshade's fiance and was in charge of something called the Occult Research Center, which I think is mentioned in this comic briefly. So apparently after she was his fiance, she was like an enemy of him. So she's got issues with Shade and I guess with the coat. Yeah.
Hmm.
See, yep. Andy, you could have done this as a legacy character.
Dude, and that's fucking DC, man.
Yeah.
Like, I get into, like, how much of this story, like, that's cool. And, I mean, for some people, that's really cool. But, like, how many, I don't know. It's tough to say, because, like, if you were a fan of Shade the Changing Man, and then you read this, all of those callbacks are awesome to see, because that's a D-level character that fucking not many people have read. And it's cool to see those callbacks. And it's cool to see a continuation of a character that you never thought would see continued again. Like, that's awesome. But then the other part of me is like, how much of the story really needed that? And was the creative team tied down at all trying to make those callbacks? Were they told from editorial? Were they fans of the original? Does that even matter? Like, I don't know.
Those are all great questions.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, I think it does add something to the comic. Because I don't think we needed to know those things. Like, well, I don't think they, at least to me, they did not create a barrier to enjoying the comic. Excuse me. Because they weren't really relevant. Like, yeah, it's interesting that Melu is Rackshade's old fiance, but I can tell from reading the comic that she's the villain, right? Or Loma's antagonist.
Yeah.
And like, you know, Rackshade keeps getting mentioned, but we never know that he was an old DC superhero. But that wasn't anything that didn't, knowing that now doesn't add anything to my understanding of this story. So I think these are like little Easter eggs for old, you know, longtime fans.
Yeah, I suppose that is a good way to draw the definitive line, because a lot of times when DC does legacy stuff, they do it in a way that the callbacks are not necessarily like necessary character bits, but you get so much more if you know those callbacks than if you don't. It's a point where it's like, you come in and you feel almost like you need to have read those things in order to get the full story, which I think is frustrating for a lot of new readers. But I you're right, David. I had no idea this character existed ever before. and like not knowing all of this detail didn't hinder my enjoyment of this comic at all. And now that I've read it, I don't feel like I need to go back and read those things to get 100% out of this story. Like, I feel like I got what I was going to get out of the story, whether I had that background or not.
Yeah, and I think that if it at this point in the first trade, it doesn't matter. But I think it can be worked into future issues maybe. But at this point, it doesn't matter, right? We know that Melu is trying to get the vest back, and she has some kind of history with the vest. But that's all we need to know. Maybe in this telling that she doesn't have a former relationship with Rackshade. Who knows? But it does. Like I said, I don't think it matters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, at that last panel in the very end, is she pregnant? Is that what we're supposed to get?
That's what it looks like to me.
Yeah.
Okay. Just that checking.
Was weird.
It looks like the thing that went into her body was the little bits of Megan's soul.
Oh, is that what right? That was? Okay, I thought that was just like part of the madness. But yeah, that was Megan's. Ooh, that's weird.
Remember they're like looking at
yeah
at the little bubbly things.
Oh my god!
And so maybe give birth to herself.
Oh my god, that's somehow fucking weird.
Yeah, it's beyond strange.
That's fucking Creepsville. Yeah, you're right. That's exactly what it is. Oh my god, that's what it is. Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, I really want to read the next volume just to find out how they resolve that.
Oh, because... so then yeah, all the pink text bubbles was Megan. So all those like mm-hmm. 2-page spreads of that pink body floating around in the ether, that was always Megan.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and what's funny is like it didn't occur to me that that's who she was until she interacted with Loma.
Yeah.
But I didn't feel like I thought, oh, that's interesting. I wasn't like, oh man, I wish they had told me that before. I viewed it as a positive twist.
I think they kind of showed us, because in the very first scene where we see part of Megan's past life, where her friends let her drown, that's where we first see the pink text boxes.
Yeah, that is a good. That is a good way to indicate who's speaking. I mean, that's one of the only ways to do it in comics. But I think I chalked it up to the madness.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think what's interesting about this kind of comic, this one in particular, is that I think there is a right way to read it because there's a story that the creator is trying to tell. But everybody's understanding of it is going to be different until there's some definitive happens in the story. And for me, that point is when the like spirit of Megan starts interacting with Loma. Before that, I thought those kinds of scenes were just Loma going nuts.
Yeah, or I thought it was Loma trying to find her way back, but her body being looking like Megan because she was in Megan's body. But actually, come to think, every time that we saw that like pink silhouette, it was Megan with long hair. And one of the first things we see Loma do is cut her hair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think on page one, you see Loma taking over Megan. And it's like this little blue thing that pushes out like a little pink blob.
Yeah.
The pink blob just like pieces out eventually.
So it seems like there was a lot of little hints that at least I didn't pick up all of them. But going back, it's kind of fun to see that there are all these little... know, these little seeds along the way.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I think it can be, in some stories, that kind of thing can be frustrating. Because if the story is more linear or more traditional, I guess, those kinds of important things you might think, oh, I wish they had made that more clear because it improves my understanding of the comic. But I think because of the whole theme of madness and all the hallucinations and things we see, and the confusion about whether the other characters can see these hallucinations and stuff, it kind of it adds to the confusion. But the confusion in this is positive because I think it's supposed to be part of the experience of reading the comic.
Yeah.
And so it's fun when, to me at least, that these things become clear at the end and you can go back and see, oh wow, all these things were just like hidden in the background. or they were hidden in the foreground and there was just so much going on that it's hard to tell.
Right, and that works out for being good art married with the storytelling, because there's actually not a whole lot of text on a lot of these pages. And I think it works too, having the madness be swirling around everywhere, because you lose things in the pages. Because I don't know about you guys, but when I'm reading and there's a bunch of swirly stuff, like, oh, cool, swirly stuff, moving on. I kind of sweep over a lot of it, but all these details are in there. And I it's on me for not having paid more attention.
and for me, I think that maybe that's intentional.
Yeah.
In that you're supposed to be confused and it's supposed to be a little bit overwhelming.
Yeah, and it sets it up, like we were saying earlier, right when Megan wakes up and you're like, I don't know what everybody's actually interacting with. What part of this is real and what part is in my head and what part is the art?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you guys have a favorite scene?
It was the part where the aliens had sex. No, I don't know.
Damn it, you stole my line.
That can be your favorite too, Andy.
No, I'm good.
I don't know. I think it's hard to say. Like, even after reading it and having discussed this, there are still things that don't make a lot of sense to me. Like when Megan Loma talks to the TV show.
Yeah.
Like, I don't remember where that began or what was, like, the impetus for it.
So I think the TV show was, like, the one Earth broadcast that they got on Meta.
Oh, right. That's right. She was watching it on Meta.
Yeah, and I think it was, like, the thing that kicked off Meta's brief interest in Earth culture.
Yes.
So it's probably part of what got Loma interested in Rackshade as well, if I had to guess.
I see.
Yes.
I mean, this comic's interesting, right? Because it's not really, there's not like big splashy scenes like we see in a lot of Cape comics. I think this is made up of a lot of small moments, and even the important things are all very personal, because these are just like teenagers, right? So, you know, they're, even though these crazy happening to them are small people in the grand scheme of things in the DC universe, right? And so their big moments aren't what we typically see in Cape comics. I like that the school's mascot is the hippos. That's new.
I think I like when Lepak goes out for beers with his buddies.
Yeah.
I don't know why I like that one so much. And they're just like, and he takes them back and they're like, what the fuck, man?
Or like, how he assumes that that lady's hitting on him at the bar.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like the one friend's analysis of like, dude, she was using you. But like it's a funny scene, but I appreciate how it kind of illustrates how Lepak has been feeling throughout this. Like, it's obviously, I think, one of those relationships where he loves her more than she loves him.
Oh, yeah, clearly.
And I don't want to say that she only used him for access to the coat. I don't think it was, like, that calculated, per se. At least I don't get that. But well, like,
I think maybe initially that was the case, but later she says that she misses him and she wonders what he's doing. And so I think that she is learning. She's learning some lessons in her time in Megan's body, and I think she realizes that there was something more with Lepak.
Yeah, and I mean, I appreciate the way too that his friends like identify, like, dude, that was fucked up for her to just leave you like this and put you in this situation. Like, that's not right, bruh,
mm-hmm. bruh.
But he's like, it's fine. She's here. I have. That is a bit creepy. Oh yeah, when she's also at the zoo talking to the other birds.
That was pretty funny, yeah. I like that scene a lot, actually.
I was like, you're hilarious. Because, A, that's what a crazy person would do, so nobody else from the school is going to question. And like, oh yeah, brain damage girl's talking to the birds, okay. But then also, like, yeah, why wouldn't she talk to the birds? And, like, it takes me a couple panels to realize she's not actually having a conversation with them, because for a second I was like, yeah, sure, she's a bird, they're birds, maybe she can talk to them.
Yeah, it's totally not, it's not clear.
Yeah.
But,
it's until she's like, funny. Until in the end she's like, it's simple call and response, I'm just imitating them, it's fine. I'm like, oh, okay. I guess it'd be like us talking to a chimp.
Yeah, we're both primates.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's enough.
Yeah, you guys want to rate this? Do we have anything else we want to say?
Yeah, I guess let's rate it.
All right, Jen, you want to go first?
Sure. I'll give this a 4. It took me no time at all to read it. I just, like, breezed through it because I was so engaged. I wanted to know what would happen to Loma. I wanted to know what would happen to Megan. And I was, like, interested in how she would navigate this situation where she's trying to befriend people and then realizes that they left Megan to die. And then she's like, who can I trust? Who can I not? And I think just kind of the questions raised, like, you know, you guys said this was a comic of quiet moments, but I think that the meditation on what it is to make amends for things that you did or didn't do, or like the way I see it is Loma is making amends for things that she did do. It's just she's doing it by proxy through Megan because, you know, Loma was not a great person on meta. So she's using someone else's fuck ups to be able to atone for her own sins and, like, resolve those and apologize. And I think that that made for a really interesting and engaging character. I really liked the art. I thought that it was really well done, and I really liked the madness and how it was depicted. And also, we didn't really talk about, like, the alternate covers, but God, they are so good.
Yeah.
I have a favorite, and it's the alternate, or the variant for chapter 4, I think. It's the one where it's like Megan looking down at her reflection in a pool of madness, and it has like the shadow of Loma's head in the background, and it's just so weird.
That is a cool one.
Yeah. But, 4.
Okay. I'll go next. I have a hard time, I want to give this one a 4 too, but I have a hard time doing it just because I gave, my favorite thing is Monsters last week. I gave that a 4. And I feel like this is really good, but I feel like this is not at that level, per se. And I feel like this doesn't have a barrier to entry because it's a legacy character or anything. I don't think it has a barrier to entry because it's fucking weird. Like, this is obviously great, but I don't want to recommend it to everybody the same way, like, Odyssey. Odyssey was great, but I ain't just going to go around handing out that recommendation. You know, I gotta know that you're into the weird shit first. So I don't know. I think if you're the audience for this comic, then for sure you're gonna dig it. And even if you're maybe the audience for this comic, you might dig it. Because this isn't my normal thing, but this was a fun read. And I think Jen, you point out the ways in which this comic is introspective, but I think it's sneakily introspective. Because you just kind of read it, and you spend so much time trying to figure out what's real and what's not real, and the madness, and what's even happening, that by the time you get a handle on that, you've accidentally learned something about yourself, almost. and it's really sneaky and effective, but I do want to know what happens with the resolution of the morality in this comic, or if it just all gets kind of like, well, you know, alien madness coach, or... because there are some big moral questions that I don't know if I really like what's going on here with them just kind of destroying her soul. Sure, she was an evil bitch, but that was her soul and this isn't your body. And are you going to tell the parents someday that you killed the soul of their daughter? And I know that's like down the line stuff in this run, but there's a lot of hefty moral questions that are just kind of glossed over here. So I guess in the end, I'm going to give this 3.5. I really do want to give it a 4, but I'm not quite to that. So I'm going to do a 3.5. David, what do you got?
I'm going to give it a 4. I really enjoyed this comic. Like Jen, I kind of like breezed through it because I was captivated by the story. I haven't really read anything like this in a while. And, you know, it's funny that this is kind of DC's new line of weird stuff. And it does remind me of many, like, Vertigo titles I've read. Like Sandman or Animal Man.
Yeah. Old Doom Patrol,
basically,
too.
A lot of Grant Morrison stuff. And I really, you know, this one I enjoyed, and I really enjoyed talking about it today. It was just really cool. It was like an interesting experience reading it.
Yeah.
And then talking about it, because it was like I said, I don't know what else to say than that it was like something really interesting and different. And I don't know if I would necessarily recommend this to everybody, but this rating is for me. And so I'm going to give it a good score, and that's going to be a 4. Yeah. And I loved the art. I did think of It was Mike Allred, right?
Yeah, Mike Allred. Yeah.
I did think of Mike Allred when I was reading this, and I had to go check to see if he was the one who did the pencils, which is not the case. But I really like this style of art, and I think this was really well done. And now that I think about it, I can see the differences between this and Mike Allred's stuff.
Yeah, but it's definitely, it gives a similar vibe.
I really enjoyed this. I enjoyed this art as much as I enjoyed Mike Allred's in some of his, and some of the things that we read that had him. So, yeah, 4.
All right. Well, thank you to the author, Cecil Castellucci, and Marley Zarconi for pencils, Andre Parks and Ryan Kelly for inks, Kelly Fitzpatrick for colors, Saida Temafonte for letters, James Rich, Molly Mahan, and Shelley Bond for editors. Those are all the people that created this comic, and I'm sure there were other people in the publishing line and everywhere else and family that helped them and all this kind of, you know, like, because really, whatever we rate them, whatever we thought about this comic, whatever you thought about this comic, those people did the work, did the creative effort, and made the thing and put it out in the world, and that deserves thanking. No matter how much you liked or didn't like what you read, like, it's creative effort, and it deserves some appreciation, not just with your dollars, but we're sitting here talking about it, so we're going to say thank you, too. That said, we're done with this week. Next week, we're going to read The Best We Could Do by Ty Bowie to move on our Best of 2017 series. I have no idea what to expect within this one, either. I did research for this, I swear, but I don't remember what all these were.
I think this is kind of fun that we don't, that I being surprised...
Yeah, because the best of, when you do best of, like, it covers a wide range of genres, and you don't really know, like, you don't know what you're going to get.
Comics are like a box of chocolate.
I know, I didn't want to end it that way, but I couldn't think of any other fucking words. That's all right. Yeah, next week, The Best We Can Do by Ty Bowie. If you want to see what we have coming up after that, we have the show planned out until June. We're recording in January. Go to welcometocomics.com, click on the button that says future shows, and you can see what we have coming up. You can also click on the button that says past shows, and maybe I will have fixed the website by now. By the time you hear this, God, I hope I have.
Someday.
If not, we have 311 previous episodes, and if you click the previous page button about 100 times, you can get to the first one. Because it's 3 per page. Yeah, and you can go to patreon.com/welcometocomics and support the show for as little as a penny. Let us know you like us, and pay more and let us know you love us and get some cool little perks and stuff. You can follow me at Jolly Andy. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter. Maybe by the time you've heard this, we've done more than just post about when the new episode comes, but maybe not. It's fine. You can find out when the new episode comes. Yeah. That's it. A very petering out outro, but that's okay. Until next week, everybody. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.